everyone out there listening, you're listening to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. One of your hosts, Phil Howard, original starter. This podcast actually started. It's funny. And we've got Steve Chico on the line. And if you screw with him, he becomes Steve Psycho. Not really. What we're talking about is the number of LinkedIn invites that we get hounded with on a daily basis. I do believe that people should at least try a little bit harder on their invite. Like people, I get 99% of the time, people really like my invite because it's like, hey, I knew you wanted to connect with another bearded technology dude. So here I am. And people tend to like that one. But when I get like, hey, by the way, I don't know what it is. You just get like a whole long paragraph in your inbox. I'm like, you do realize human beings don't speak like that.
No, and I frequently question their grasp on the buzzwords that come within the invite. So, you know, you try and parse through and weed out the good ones. Mm-hmm. Yours was a good one, or actually who I heard from your podcast. So happy to be here. Happy to be talking to you.
Yeah, my boy Darren. Yeah, so it is a struggle that we have because there's a lot of pay-to-play models out there. Gartner Magic Quadrant, no thing. But we do need to use them for some things. And so, yeah, that's one of the struggles that we have trying to find good IT directors to be on the show is because they're like, what's the catch? Like, there's no catch. We just want to talk about how you crawled out of the server closet. And we don't have to slide pizzas under the door anymore to clean off our mouse rollerball. So yes,
I do make a concerted effort to put a little personality behind the IT facade and let people know that sometimes we have personalities. Sometimes, dare I say, even a sense of humor.
Yes, it's much needed. So here's the thing. Let's start off with an oldie but a goodie. What was your first computer?
Oh, well, let's see. If we're breaking out computers from gaming consoles, I'm guessing it was the Apple IIc. I think we probably had a Commodore before that, but I didn't really. My dad used the Apple like as a computer, and we also used it for video games. Shout out to original Castle Wolfenstein and Below the Root.
Wow. So just so if I remember this correctly, because... And make sure we've got the right model here because I had first computer. Well, no, first computer was Texas Instruments, Bill Cosby special. And if you remember, he was like the main marketing legend for the Texas Instruments, but Apple IIc also. 5.25 floppy disk in the side, right side.
Yeah, a green tilted up and like back. The green screen.
Yes, very good. Very nice. I think, man, Wolfenstein. They had that on that?
The old school, like you talk to so many people play. Today and they think of the first person shooter, but this is like you walking through the castle trying to pick the locks. You could get the uniforms that made you disguise.
Freaking awesome.
Very old school, hardcore Gen Xer here.
This is excellent. This couldn't go any better right now. but for any new listeners out there, somehow we've grown to the 11th ranked technology podcast. I have no clue. I think it's just because we keep doing it and we don't give up. And maybe there's some level of, I don't know, insanity in my voice. We like to talk about most likely we didn't land on the moon. That's what I say. Everyone gets really mad when I bring that one up. At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day. So yes, very genuine IT leadership, peer-to-peer, because like you said, and you mentioned before we started doing this, that when you get to a certain level, I don't know, certain things start happening. You get unsolicited requests quite often. But the other thing is, and other people have said this before, is that IT leadership, and I think more specifically in the mid-market space, 200 end users to say 10,000, it can be lonely at the top. Do you find that to be a true statement?
Well, and I don't know how much we get into like specific companies, but the company I work for, they're their own company, but they're a very small piece in a much bigger organization. Okay. So it's a real gray area for me about like, well, how many end users do I really have? Because the company above all of us is hundreds of thousands. The people I work with, you know, probably 50 to 100, maybe less than that. And we're spread out. So I'm an IT director. We have other IT directors out there. I'm in North America, so I for sure wouldn't say I'm on the top, but as you get up there, and I guess what I was thinking about with those unsolicited things is I've been with the same company my whole career. I graduated college in 2000, started working for one company, transferred to their subsidiary, and have been there since 2005. And what I've learned over the years is really to be self-sufficient, where we can do everything in-house, like whether it's design, development, testing, implementation. And it's tough for me to get these requests whenever I've worked really hard to be self-sufficient. And what gets difficult as you start getting these titles associated with yourself, manager, senior manager, director, and it's like, well, you know, should you really still be doing development and architecture? And I kind of feel that whenever you have the business knowledge and you can kind of set that strategy, I feel very fortunate to still be able to do the architecture and the development, because we have like a relatively small organization and a lean IT infrastructure or a lean IT force. So I want to be able to do everything without having to worry about vendor agreements and contracts. And, you know, we have gone down that route before, and it has not ended up well, where we're not going to be able to impart 5, 10, 15 years of business knowledge into a vendor and have them understand what it is that we're looking for. So I think whenever you do find vendors, it's really important for us at least to make sure that they're long-term partners, not just some random LinkedIn person that says, I'm here to offer you AI guidance, or I'm here to offer you cybersecurity advice.
This is very unique. This may be one of the first times we've had this on the show. This you actually are the first person I've ever had on the show. We're nearing 300 shows. We might be over 300. I don't even know what's in the queue right now, because now we've got three other hosts too. We've got the two mics, and we got Doug and myself. I don't think I've ever had someone that's been at the same company. I've had someone that was at the same company for like 30 years. And can you imagine how much IT has changed in that? I've had that, But you've been at the same company since day one. That's something that I feel like
an asterisk. It was, it's my HR record does go back to 2000. All right, but there was a
it's 2000. It's year 2000. It's barely post Y2K, barely post Y2K. So, and that's, I'm saying that. So people are like, what are you talking about? What's Y2K? Everyone knows. Yeah. If you're in IT, you know, right. There is probably like a division, but, and you've had the good blessing to have been involved in numerous projects in strategy. And what you're saying is, I don't even know how to describe it, because it's the, I have the keys to the castle. I need to hold on to the keys to the castle. There's no way I'm giving those keys to the castle away to a vendor, especially when what we've built might be so unique and so interesting. And there's these weird APIs and we've built custom software to make something do something. Why would I turn that over to a vendor over after a maybe at best 3 1-hour meetings?
Yes. Yes.
So just tell me, please. I want to know one aspect of some kind of strategy thing that, and I say it selfishly because we're at a point in this weird podcast life cycle, which I don't even know, where we've got all kinds of weird, we've got tons of data now, and I'm stuck in this weird middle ground where the podcast started out. I'm being very selfish right now talking about myself. I don't do this that often, but maybe you can give me some advice because you've been through this since for 24, 23 years. We're in 2024. I guess it's 23 years. So you've seen a lot of change and you've seen a lot of technology change. We started out, me recording a podcast on a cell phone because I was late to the podcast in a Starbucks, drive-thru. Okay. I literally started recording like one of the first podcasts in a Starbucks drive-thru. Now we've got 4 hosts. We've got 10 employees. We've got development overseas. And I built the original, website kind of like bootstrapped. And then we redid it again. And then we redid it again. And now we're at the point where we have so much data and we really want to have a turnkey website. We want to take all the episodes and break down the data and turn it into have different people writing valuable articles based on, you know, whatever this particular juggernaut that you have been so fortunate to be involved in. Right. So what I found is there's either design your own website and use outsourcing kind of thing, or there's pay some firm 20 grand plus tons more money to do it yourself, or be so fortunate to pay a full-time employee to come do your web development. There's no in between. Ever run into a problem like that? No in between. We either have massive spend or do it yourself in-house, and we're kind of sick of, well, we could do it in-house ourselves, but we need more headcount. We probably don't have the budget for that. I don't know. I'm like psychology. This is like me. I'm sitting on your psychology, IT psychology couch right now. I don't really know what to.
I have, like you said, I have starting in 2000. I have seen so many changes, and it for your particular situation, I know everybody's busy, but when I've been faced like something like that, it's a challenge for me. Like, my bread and butter for probably the first 5 years of my career was VB6 and SQL 6.5. Mm. And I thought that I had the keys to the kingdom knowing those two things. Mm. Fast forward into a long stint doing operational technology, like the shop floor automation. And just over the years, it's now Python, it's PLCs, it's MySQL, it's Click. It's just all of these different things get added to the tool belt. Web development, funny enough, is one of the things that after classic ASP, that shout out to old Visual Interdev, is one of the things that I have a basic understanding of whipping something together in .NET, but as far as like putting something out there, is not something that I've worked on. But in your case, I would look at that as, oh my God, this is my weekend project. And I don't know if this is your guys' full-time gig or not, but the name of your podcast, like IT Nerds, that is me. So when I'm not doing stuff like this, I'm working on Raspberry Pis, home automation. Mm. So if I had your empire and the ability to now handcraft it to be my own thing where I don't need to rely on anybody else. And that's just like the front end design, but then getting into the back end of and what I've been doing the last couple of years after I got out of that operational technology role is business intelligence. So all of the data that you must have about where your listeners are, what the demographic is,
how about just hours and hours and hours of show and data all transcribed all into, I mean, like just pain points from real people struggling with real issues, how they overcame it, how they got a seat at the executive roundtable, I every day I get so excited every time I see it and I see all the stuff that comes up and I'm like, all right, what are we going to do with it? And it's just like, oh, it's like a mountain to climb.
Well, that is a problem that I face too. And I put the responsibility on myself where I'll present something to the business and I think it's like, this is everything that I think they need to make data-driven decisions. Mm-hmm. And I quickly realized like, this is too much. You have to figure out how to break this into more digestible. And this is me talking to business people. Like it would be a different story for you and your IT like-minded coworkers. But like you said, I can only imagine how much data you have. And as an avid podcast listener, I have often wondered what the data model is for podcasters. Like this is so dumb. I try to be as accurate as possible as a podcast listener. And I'm always curious if I'm just not interested in a podcast, I make sure that I remove it instead of doing Marcus Played because I don't want to provide false data for the podcaster because I don't know if the data behind it, how it captures what people are doing. Like, does it capture if they listened to it, if they removed it from their queue, if they deleted it before? And it gets my mind spinning about like, if I ever got into podcasting, I would love to understand how the data for it is structured and how I could use that to be a better podcaster.
Yeah, it's interesting. I see followers, new followers. I see episodes downloaded. I see average listening time. I definitely see spikes in certain episodes, which probably has to do with who shared it and that type of thing. Yes, I think followers would probably, I'm always shocked when I have someone, I hear from somebody and they're like, yeah, like I regularly listen to your show on the way to work. I'm like, really? That's pretty sweet. I don't know, you know, like you regularly, yeah, like I actually like feel like I'm part of a community of other IT directors and, you know, like together, I'm like, that's awesome because, I mean, we're just sitting here talking. I just hit record. I didn't really have any agenda to talk about with you. Maybe we should. Maybe we should have something to come out of this.
Well, I'll be happy to say that you will get added to my playlist. And I went for a run before this and had one of my favorite like pop culture podcasts in my ears. So like I as a podcast fan. And this being my first time on a podcast, I do want to give a shout out to you and fellow podcasters to say, like, you really do make a big difference in a lot of people's lives, like being in people's ears, whether it's a commute, whether it's exercise, whether it's, you know, something. Honestly, if I'm working on something where it's just straight coding, it's either classical music or one of my favorite podcasts that is in my ear. So, yeah, you reach a lot of people and do a lot of good.
Some of us do because the average podcast, I think one of the reasons why it's easy to be in the top 1% is because the average podcaster does 5 episodes and like gives up or something like that. So, and yes, IT leadership now being in the same role for 20 years, speaking about vendors being, I guess, skeptical of whether they can do something. What vendors do you have that are good? What vendors do you love? Or is it more I don't really like this word, but it's actually used in my industry, who sucks less?
Well, I'll take this is going back to my OT days where we would build special equipment. Like these are machines to produce what it is that we do.
What is it that you guys do? Because I have medical equipment, but why don't we talk about what you guys actually do?
It's transitions lenses, the photochromic lenses that turn dark when you walk outside in the sunlight.
Okay.
So we're making equipment that helps us coat these lenses. And this is just one particular example. There would have been a team of mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, PLC programmers, vision system people. Mm-hmm. And when was this have been? This would have been like 2010 or 2009, kind of when I was first starting to get into it. Mm-hmm. And all of the programming that's associated with this is very specific. There's ties into your relational database. There's a connection to the machines themselves. There's sometimes connections to other industrial devices like cameras or RFID readers and whatnot. And you're trying to tell this organization or this vendor to program in whatever, most often .NET, how to do all of this. And we kind of learned the hard way that we didn't really know how to do it and they didn't really know how to do it. And it ended up not great. And shortly after that, we said, okay, vendor, you're good at building stuff and putting it together and then let us program. And they would know how to build it such that it can mechanically do what we need it to do. But we left all of the programming to a handful of us in-house. And those, you know, there are two vendors that come to mind that we just worked with over and over. Anytime we needed a new piece of equipment, we went to them and they kind of knew what they were good at. They knew what we were good at. And it was just a really, really great relationship. I think that they still work with a handful of them. I'm not in that role anymore, though.
How many programmers?
In this case, it would have been me doing the front end and the database stuff, a vision guy, a PLC guy. Yeah, probably like three actual programmers, but the other, like the PLC person, would have been part of engineering, not necessarily IT. This whole episode that you guys had on operational technology, mm-hmm. is phenomenal. Like it was a great summer. It was great to hear other people talk about IT and OT. And even though I'm not in that role anymore, it's something that I just love. There is such a pleasure to seeing something physical happen as a result of all of your code, as opposed to like a BI dashboard that just like sits there.
How intimately involved do you think executive management is with IT and OT in that fashion? How aware are they of the fact that so many things can live and die on the vine there, or that the flux capacitor of the company could blow up at any moment if you lost some developers and, you know, this, I guess you would call it jiving. Well, I've had some of the data that I have crunched. The one of the five major pain points that IT directors mention when it comes to vendors is the ability of us to jive with the other company's team, or jive with your vendor's team. If there's not a jiving there or a working together type of thing, which you've already mentioned, it doesn't work. So if that falls apart, then what?
Back to do it yourself. And we had a situation way back when where I put a proposal together and said, hey, I think we can do all this ourselves. And they said, we don't, because of exactly what you said, which is a very valid concern. I do want to be clear that there are pros and cons to everything.
Yeah, both can blow up. Both can, yeah. I mean, yeah.
And in this particular case, I said, you know, I think I can do this. And they said, well, we don't want just one person, like one internal employee. We want an established vendor that we can go back to. And if there's a problem, like we have an SLA mm-hmm. with them mm-hmm. and we brought them in, their quote was astronomical. They're using all sorts of technologies that weren't part of our techno stack. And they ended up, I got to build it myself, which was one of the most fun projects I've ever done. And it existed until that particular plant shut down. And I'm also happy to say, like, not being in that role anymore, I get no support calls or anything. So I think that, you know, just another one of my pillars of good IT leadership, and not even leadership, just being a good IT person, is build your stuff. This is nothing new. Build your stuff so people behind you can support it. And I think that, yeah, you comment it, people understand, you make it as easy as possible. The thing that's always in the back of my head is lowest common denominator. So when I'm writing something, I'm going to do so in the least number of lines of codes. And that's it's one of my pet peeves is whenever it says, oh, well, I just did something and it was like 30,000 lines of code. And it just strikes me as an odd KPI to use to like try and tell people that something is a good piece of code. Like right. I'm much more happy to say, oh, that whole thing that runs that whatever is only 3,000 lines of code.
It's like speaking volumes in a single sentence type of thing.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like when he speaks, he doesn't speak often, but when he does, you know, it speaks volumes. How'd you get into the role that you did get into? And is it more of a human connection piece versus making machines work and work together well? And I guess, what was your hardest moment? Because I know when I went from, I love taking orders. I love taking orders. I love doing work. Somehow now I'm stuck in this other role, which is called like leadership and vision and mission statements and guiding people and feedback and then allowing people to coach you and be open to feedback and all these other things I find to be much more mentally stressful than the old days of just do the work.
Yes. And back to what I was saying about how I feel fortunate that I can still do work. And by work, I mean like architecture development and stuff like that. But oddly enough, the timing coincided with COVID, but it wasn't necessarily because COVID that I got transferred to this different role. And at first I was terrified because like I was taken out of my world that I in a lot of ways built from scratch. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
and they said what? So what was it? Hey, by the way, COVID came. What? Where things are changing? What? We're downsizing.
Things are changing.
By the way, you're now here.
you're now business intelligence manager after being manufacturing execution system manager.
Okay.
And I did a brief stint when I first started in sales and marketing, doing IT stuff for sales and marketing. So some of the stuff I was familiar with, but it's like, How do I just completely change my mindset and start really working more with people and strategy and vision rather than a machine and operators and plant supervisors? And it was a struggle, but just like I was saying earlier with looking at your thing with the websites, I saw it as a challenge. I dove right in. They kind of gave me guidelines of what it is that they were interested in doing, like with particular pieces of software that I had heard of but didn't know about.
Maybe and give me a metaphorical example if you're not allowed to speak about it, but I'm fascinated. I need to know.
I don't know if I'm not allowed to speak about it, but ClickSense in this particular case was the BI platform of choice. And mm-hmm. It was something something business intelligence, something something ClickSense, something something data-driven decision making. And a really great thing about my company is they give you the flexibility to kind of find your own way. Like they'll kind of point you in the direction of this is what we want to go, where we want to go, but it can be up to you to figure out how we get there. And so it was,
in other words, bring the results.
Yeah. And so it was, I love puzzles. I love solving things and fixing things. And so in this particular case, it was, okay, well, I know what this is, and I don't think that there's really anybody in-house that's an expert. So why can't I become the expert? And that's when you just start diving into how it works. So on the technology side, you obviously have to do some upskilling yourself to learn their architecture and syntax and whatnot. But then on the business side, and this is where working for a single company for so long comes in handy. It's like, okay, well, I kind of know where all of the data sources are that could turn into results, whether it's a flat file, whether it's a cloud database, whether it's a CRM, whether it's a survey company, how can I put all of that together and present it as such that is now going to give the people the data that they need? And really one of the biggest things that I see in my job, whether it's sales and marketing, whether it's shop floor, whether it's logistics or finance, is really just how do I take all of this raw data, put it all together into something that is useful and present it to them as easy as possible? And boiling that down into even fewer words is, how do I make people's jobs easier? And that's exactly what I see as an IT person. That is what I have always believed my job to be, is making other people's jobs easier.
So we took the data. Mm-hmm. We crunched the data. Do we meet with people and find out, hey, what do you do for a job? What do you want to do with this data? What's the objective? Once we crunch that data, then what?
Then you hope that they use it the way you intended it to, which is the hardest part. Because for me, the easy and fun part is putting everything together. And I'll be honest, there are some things that don't really work the way I want them to, or aren't used the way I want them to. And I think it really goes back to the fact that everybody's busy. And even if you have done your best to make something with push notifications, like as soon as the data that they're looking for, you have made this as easy as you possibly can. But I think the real challenge is getting people to understand the value of data. And it's going to remain a challenge, I think, for a really long time. And I really take it to the extreme, because in a not just my professional life, but personal life, whether it's banking alerts or whether it's like I'm a avid runner and I like crunching all of the numbers from running, like I don't know how to exist without having easy access to a ton of different data. And sometimes, to my fault, it's difficult for me to understand how other people can ignore the power and importance of easily accessible, valuable data.
Yeah, because that's humans. That's like the 80-20 rule. And right. And 80% of the people probably are not like just crazy driven, passionate about any, they may be in one thing, but it may not be that thing. It may not be that thing. And then in general, what thing ever turns out the way that we imagine it's going to turn out? Like, no matter whether you went to school for the first day or whether you went to college or whatever, and you go and you do the little tour on campus and you imagine, oh, it's going to be like this, it's going to be like that. And then you actually go, it's not nothing like that at all.
But back to the shop floor stuff, that's where that is nice, because like it's pretty binary, where it either works or it doesn't work. There's not a lot of gray area in that particular part of my career, which really just stating or just an observation. But yeah,
no. What you're saying is I like binary. What you're saying is look, I like cut and dry. Okay. I don't like this whole, like,
it's a lot easier to gauge your success and effectiveness in a binary world. For sure.
But that's the problem that a lot of IT directors are dealing with now, is we left from a binary world where we've got to deal with people and emotions and emotional intelligence and empathy and all these other things that are going on. For example, you mentioned personal life. You mentioned you like running. I find runners can be obsessive. I used to be a big runner. I'm an obsessive person. I used to run a lot. I wanted to run marathons and all this stuff. And then I started running 16 miles a day and my knees started to hurt. And I was like, yeah, you know. And then I saw a jujitsu studio and a guy flipping a jujitsu sign outside. And then that was it. And then jujitsu completely engulfed my life and became a complete addiction that was even worse than running. Then I took up surfing as well. That also became an absurd addiction, to the point where I was like, you know, running's just not as fun as any of this, but running is like this adrenaline rush. And as you're running, I don't know if you do long runs or short runs, or like, what's your average run? Like, what are you doing? 6 miles? What are you doing?
Well, it's, I did the whole marathon and a handful of ultras, but the longest I'll do is a half marathon.
So I'm curious about the data. Like, so what's your average day? Like, how do you prepare for something? Like, do you run like 6 miles every day? Do you run 3 miles, 3 miles, and 6 miles? I mean, like, we might, it's important.
Back to this whole data-driven thing that is, it's crystal clear for me, and it's difficult for me to understand. Like, when you can put rules around your life, it makes life so much easier. So I have a checklist that it was from 2012 until 2018, it was 100 miles a month with at least one 10 miler.
And miles a month. I'm writing this down because this is great. Yeah. This is like Atomic Habits. Have you read the book Atomic Habits? You might love it.
No,
Or listen to it. Atomic Habits. Been on the New York Times bestseller list forever. And I think it's legit.
Okay.
I think it's a legit bestseller, not like one of the ones that's like been hacked into. Like I, you know, like some people do like play the numbers, you know, and quit get a bunch of followers on Amazon or something like that. No, this is legit. You will love this book, Atomic Habits. And just download the audio. If you're an audiobook guy, just download. You will absolutely love this. If you do not love this, I should be getting credit for this. Why can't I remember your name? Atomic Habits guy, you should be paying me money. And he's going to be like, how do you not know who I am? It's like, so anyways, Atomic Habits. I'm going to Google it.
Right, written down, and we'll check that out. But it's just, it's, and so then I started getting slower and cut that 100 to 50 in July of 2018. But
James Clear, by the way, James Clear. So to James not offend Clear. James Clear in case he wants to sue me or something, I don't know.
Well, a preemptive thank you, James Clear, for this fantastic book that I'm going to read. But it's just when you have rules and like a, back to the puzzle thing, like a puzzle that I have to do at the start of every month is now I only run on the weekends and I lift weights during the week. But so only running on the weekends, knowing that I need to get to now 50 miles since 2018, but with at least one 10 miler, it's a puzzle at the start of every month where you kind of plot out, do I have any vacation days? I do spend a week a month in Florida where my office is. I'm remote in Dallas. And so I have to look at the calendar and figure out like, okay, well, where are my 50 miles going to come from? Where is the 10 miler going to come from? In Dallas, it was 11 degrees a month ago, and it's going to be 82 this, and it's, you know, it's 110 in the summer. So all of these different variables come into play of like, okay, I want my 10 miler to be as fast as possible. But now you have to figure out where the best place to do it is to make your numbers look good. So with rules like that, it just makes life easy. And I think that if businesses kind of put some structure around it, like this is what we have to do, this is the easiest way to capture the data to make sure that we're doing what we said we're going to do, is just all very logical and linear to me.
Hey guys, this is Phil Howard, founder of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I just wanted to take a few minutes to address something. It has become fairly apparent, I'm sure all of you will agree, over the years, that slow vendor response times, vendors in general, the average is mediocre. Support is mediocre. Mediocrity is the name of the game. Not only is this a risk to your network security, because I've seen vendors on numerous occasions share sensitive information, but there's also a direct correlation to your budget and your company's bottom line. Not to mention the sales reps that are trying to sell you and your CEO and your CFO on a daily basis. That causes a whole nother realm of problems that we don't have time to address. Our back office program at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we've put together specifically for IT leadership, and it's on a mission to eliminate this mediocrity. And the best part is that we're doing this in a way that will not cost your IT department a dime. So if you'd like us to help you out, get better pricing, better support, and jump on pressing issues in minutes, not days, then contact us now so we can get on a call with you and conduct a value discovery session where we find out what you have, why you have it, and where you want to go and how we can improve your life, your IT department, and your company's bottom line. What you're going to end up with is, number one, just faster support from partners who care about your organization's uptime and bottom line. And because you're going to be able to access our $1.2 billion in combined buying power, you'll be able to benefit significantly from historical data. And on top of that, you'll also benefit from the skills of hundreds of on-demand experts that we have working behind the scenes that are all attached to our back office support program. So if you'd like, again, none of this is ever going to cost you a dime. At the very least, it's going to open your eyes to what's possible. Let our back office team provide you the high-touch solutions and support that your IT team deserves so that you can stop calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND for support. Now, if you're wondering, what does this apply to? This applies to your ISPs, your telecom providers, all your application providers, whether you're a Microsoft shop or a Google shop, what you might be paying for AWS, even Azure, colocation space, any of those vendors that you're paying a monthly bill to, we can help you with.
Hey, it's Greg, the Frenchman secretly managing the podcast behind the curtain. To request your one-on-one call, contact us at internet@popularit.net. And remember, it will never cost you a dime.
What? Very, very few people have an answer to this. I think it's a key point to life. Don't know what it means. What is the end game for you? And I don't believe, me personally, just because type of person I am, I don't believe the, you know, cash out on my 401k when I'm 70. That's just not the answer to me. But no, what is it? What's the end game for IT professionals? Is it I live and breathe and die this every day? I mean, what is it?
For me specifically, or just in
general? Yeah, for you. No, of course, for you.
I think about it all the time. I want to leave. I guess hopefully it's been kind of obvious that I'm very passionate about this. And mm-hmm. as long as I have that passion, and as long as I feel like I can build things that make the business, like I don't want to say I have catchphrases, but I say the same things a lot to a lot of people. Wake up every day and figure out this tool belt that I've built over the years of business knowledge and technology and programming languages and everything else. How am I going to use that tool belt to make the company a better place? And as long as I continue to do that, I will just keep working. Hopefully anyone in charge of raises or promotions or whatever isn't listening, but it stopped being about money for me a long time ago. It's just something that I really enjoy doing. And as long as I continue to enjoy it, I'm just going to keep doing it.
Is there any keys to that? Is there any keys to, like, because I'm sure everyone would love to wake up every day and just say, I love going to work. No, I love my job. I'm sure everyone would love to wake up every day and say, I love my job. I love going to work. So what, is there anything that, any advice there for someone to, I guess, love their job more, or I don't know what, it's just, what is it?
I guess I love finding ways that technology can make people's lives better. And if you haven't been handed a super detailed 10-page spec with everything that needs to be done, you should be able to figure out what's in your tool belt, how to build on your tool belt, and how to do something. Like, I can't tell you the number of projects I've done that were not asked for. It was me more just like seeing that there was a need someplace, knowing that I had the tools in my tool belt to build something.
You're the digital transformation guy. You're the digital transformation guy without having to, before digital transformation. Like, don't just sit around and press keys and turn the, I don't know, turn the gears and cranks and, you know what I mean? Actually look at the business. And this is key. It's look at the business, know what the business is trying to accomplish, know what your people and other people in the company are trying to accomplish, and look at the technology that's there and make it better, or bring in what needs to be done to do that. And
yeah,
if you love doing that, if you love being creative and solving problems with technology in a binary fashion, then do it.
Now, one of the things that I've being just with one, and I was a little nervous coming on here because I don't know what the rest of the IT world, like, I've been to conferences, obviously, and
look, I've been at the same company since 2020. I don't care.
But
all right, I'm doing pretty good. No,
it makes me wonder what I've missed out on by not getting exposed to other things. And like one of the things, like around probably 2009 or maybe 2010, I started hearing this word DevOps, and I'm not a buzzword guy.
Like, I've been doing this already, guy. I've been doing DevOps. What's this waterfall? That's stupid.
And it's the more I've found Agile and Scrum and Waterfall and DevOps and SecOps, and I don't know. I probably am not going to be popular for saying this, but it just, I don't know why you need fancy words to talk about, like.
Been saying it for a long time, guy. It's called common sense. Okay.
It's called
common sense to have someone work in parallel when you're doing a project, to have someone else working on something at the same time. And it's common sense to not try to do things in a linear fashion and wait for someone else to do the job. There should be someone else working on something else at the same time.
Well, and it's one of my other like coin phrases or whatever, get it done-ology. Like whenever I started hearing all of these methodologies, it's like, can't we just say like get it done-ology?
Someone had to sell a certification course and make some money and call it DevOps 101. And someone else out there got rich to that. And now everyone else needs to get certified on it and get certified in common sense. Okay. But we couldn't call it common sense. We need to put a big buzzword on it. I'm with you 100%. Now everyone, well, I'm a DevOps, I'm certified, whatever it is. Okay. Good.
What?
Not saying
better or worse. I have zero certifications. I graduated with a business degree with a concentration in information technology. I had no programming. Well, you have a degree, though.
We have this debate all the time. Do certifications matter? Does an MBA matter? Well, some people say, well, yeah, if you want to get a job at a company that absolutely requires you have an MBA, then it does matter. But if I was a business owner, which I am, I want the best guy for the role that has the most experience that can get the job done. That's what I care about. If you have an MBA and you're an idiot, I don't, you know, is that even possible? I don't know if that's possible. You know, you could have an MBA, but you have no, it's kind of like the doctor that has, I have to get my hip replaced, possibly, right? Do I want the doctor that graduated at the top of his class in Harvard that you know, has done 5 surgeries? Or do I want the guy that graduated years ago from some other place, I don't know, that's got 20,000 surgeries underneath his belt and, you know, all these different like unique ways and has seen all different types of body parts and sizes? And I think that's just common sense. Call it DevOps. Call it DevOps. Steve, it's been
DevOps for your hip replacement. Good luck.
That's we go down a rabbit hole there about healthcare and where we need you as well. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I do think it would be fun to walk. You might have just, you know, been at the right company since day one. You know, some other people aren't, right? That's another conversation for another time. Is like, how do you pick winners when you do go to a right company? You picked a winner from the beginning. So, you know, congratulations.
Thanks. This has been a lot of fun.
Any words of wisdom or anything to I don't know, send out to the listeners?
You hate to end with something as common as this, but if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yes. So actually get involved and maybe be involved in the business and understand what the vision of the company is, understand what the purpose is of the company. And if you can't get bought into that purpose, then you're probably at the wrong place. If you are bought into that purpose, then you probably need to connect with people and find out other people that are there for that purpose as well and help them do their job better through technology.
Exactly.
With ones and zeros. All right, man. Thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular
Ideas. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.